And the number to call is 1-800-800-5867, or go to our website and donate safely and securely, capradio.org. Hi, I'm Steve Milne with Linnea Edmeyer, taking just a few minutes now to explain why it's the perfect time for you to join other Cap Radio listeners and to become a donor. Now is the time to do it. Support Insight with Beth Ruyak, Morning Edition, all the programs that you count on to keep you informed. Cap Radio is depending on you to help pay for it with a contribution. The number again, 1-800-800-5867.
And we are here because of listeners like you. You are the reason we're here, but we can't do this without you. I want to give a thank you to the folks we've heard from, Tahoma and Truckee and Martinez. I know you guys are probably streaming us. There's probably a lot more of you also streaming us. You can hear Steve and I right now. There's a little little button there to donate. Hit that button. Become a member of Cap Radio. 800-800-5867 is the number in case you are listening to us in the phone in the car. Pull over, though, first. We want you to be safe. And today, if you donate today, you get in on our drawing for a $500 gift card to Target. But that's only today. Your window of opportunity on that is closing after today. So don't wait. 800-800-5867. 800-800-5867. Or capradio.org.
We just heard Beth Ruyak interview our Capital Bureau Chief, Ben Adler. Cap Radio is committed to providing you with the facts that keep you informed. We cover the heartbeat of what's happening at the State House here in Sacramento, as well as national news and politics every week. We're following the most impactful pieces of legislation that affect your community, and it's all made possible because of listener support. So if we haven't heard from you yet, please call now, 1-800-800-5867.
Yeah, a lot has changed since 1979. 1979, that is the year that Cap Radio went on the air. That's 40 years of public radio here in our region. What hasn't changed in all that time is how we rely on you to grow and pay for what you hear. Make your online contribution now at capradio.org and take a look around, scroll around, take a look at all the things that your support goes to. And when you get online and you look around, you can be telling yourself, hey, I just supported that program, that podcast, that news segment is possible because of me. So do it now, 1-800-800-5867 or capradio.org.
Donate to Cap Radio and you could win a $500 Target gift card. There's no limit on your donation, but there is a limit on time. Time is running out, so please do it now, capradio.org, or make the call, 1-800-800-5867.
This is Insight Live on Cap Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak. Gavin Newsom is still in El Salvador today. It's his first international trip as governor of California. It began Sunday, 2 days after President Trump visited Calexico, California. Immigration issues, you probably know, prompted both trips, although the messages and the perspectives of Trump and Newsom are dramatically different. The only California lawmaker with the governor is Assemblymember Wendy Carrillo. She was born in El Salvador in the midst of the Civil War in the 80s, and she came across the border with her grandmother as an undocumented child when she was five. The Assemblymember called us yesterday from El Salvador. I started the conversation by asking her when the discussion of this trip began.
Well, I actually spoke to the governor about El Salvador months ago. We were together in Mexico City for the inauguration of the new president of Mexico, and he had visited a few places that had encampments for the migrant caravans. And that's when I also personally told him my own story about immigrating from El Salvador. So he has always been interested and has been very interested in the issues of the root cause of migration and the role that California can play.
I'm going to get to your story in just a minute. I do want to know, in your opinion, why you think the governor should be there.
I think it's very important that the governor is here in El Salvador. California is home to close to 700,000 Salvadorians. It's home to 50,000 of which are TPS recipients. There is a very direct connection with the state of California to the country of El Salvador. And the more that we've talked to folks on here and organizations and government officials, it's very clear that there is a direct link between the state and the country. And so when you think about the population of California, we're talking about people that have immigrated and built a new life in the state.
El Salvador was your childhood home. It must be quite a personal experience to be there in this way. And as I ask you that, would you also set the stage for your own story that began there?
It's really powerful for me personally to come back to my country of birth in this new capacity as a member of the Assembly and as someone that's been invited to come to the country and have conversations about the root causes of migration and the economic issues that are very real to people here in this country. I came to the United States when I was 5 years old and during the Civil War, which was 12 years long. And we immigrated not because we wanted to, but because we needed to in order to survive, in order to live. And that, I think, is a conversation that is often missing when people talk about why people immigrate, why people flee violence and war, and why they choose to do whatever they can to provide a better life for themselves and their families. That's the stage in which I see this trip for myself, as being the only representative of Salvadorian origin in the state legislature in this moment in our nation's history, where we're seeing anti-immigrant sentiment, when we're seeing people from the triangle countries of El Salvador, Honduras, Guatemala, immigrate because of deep, deep poverty that hasn't been addressed in El Salvador in particular since the war. Being here, being in El Salvador and meeting with the president and meeting with the ambassador and learning about how much the United States is actually investing in El Salvador gives me hope and gives the people of El Salvador hope. And that investment, which is we call foreign aid, is actually a boost to the local economy here in terms of jobs, in terms of prosperity. So if we truly want to think about curbing the regular immigration, we have to look at what the U.S. is currently doing to invest in this country following so much devastation after the war.
Your mom went first to the United States seeking asylum. What year was that?
My mom must have left El Salvador somewhere between 1982 and 1983. I was 2 years old and came to the United States seeking political asylum and was denied. She was seeking refugee status and was denied. But she understood that we didn't really have a lot of choices. So she stayed, and she worked really hard to save money to send for myself and her mother, my grandmother. And it took about 3 years for her to save that. And so early 1986, we immigrated from El Salvador to the United States. And I often think about what my journey would have been if I were doing that today, because very much like the young children that are leaving and fleeing violence, my family was fleeing war. If I were a five-year-old now, what would my chances be? Would I have been separated from my grandmother at the border? Would I have been put in a cage? Would I be living the rest of my childhood life in a detention center? And I don't have that circumstance now, but I do feel a sense of responsibility in having had opportunity and having a very similar story and now being in this incredible position to be able to talk to my colleagues and to advocate for what is needed and what is just, to make sure that at the end of the day, the policy that we work on both in the state and on the federal level has a human perspective, that we are talking about people and human lives. And I think that is often missing when we discuss policy.
What specifically do you remember about getting across the border as a five-year-old?
I actually have quite vivid memories. I remember specifically that I was wearing one of my favorite shirts, which was, remember, it's the 1980s. So I had a Mickey Mouse shirt with red sleeves and the white center. And I remember my hair was in pigtails. And my grandmother told me that I needed to be very quiet and that I needed to be my utmost best so that I wouldn't get in trouble. And I felt that things were very serious, and I just try to, at the time, just be a good granddaughter and listen to my grandmother as we traveled. But I didn't really know what was going on. I knew that we had left our home, and I knew that we were going somewhere new. I remember as a little girl growing up speaking to my mother on the phone and seeing photos of her, but never having actually met her because she left when I was very young, and all I have are photos of us. And so when we were reunited, it felt like a completely new life for me. And that was the beginning of a whole new start, and left everything we knew. And at the time, you know, I'm 5 years old, I don't know what it is that we were leaving. And it wasn't until much later that I fully understood. And then I learned my status about being without legal status, and then had the opportunity, thank God, to have residency and then apply for citizenship in my early 20s. And that has completely changed my life. I was the first one in my family to be able to vote. My four younger sisters were born in Boyle Heights. My mother became a citizen under President Obama, and my father is in the process of becoming a citizen himself. And so that, I think, is the promise of America and what we all try to do to just improve our circumstance and try to live a better life.
What's your sense of how the politics and the atmosphere of today compared to what was happening in the 1980s? And I realize you were a very small child, but you've studied it. You know what was happening in the bigger sense then. How is this time similar or not?
I have Republican colleagues who call themselves Reagan Republicans, and I completely understand what they are referring to. That Reagan Republican era is not the Republican era that we are currently experiencing in the White House. And there is a huge, huge difference. I've seen debates with Reagan. I've seen debates with Bush Sr. where the issue of immigration was spoken about with human dignity. And that's not what we're seeing now. We have a president who talks about human lives and other human beings and calls them animals and calls them rapists, and says things like, they're not sending their best. That is not the dignified rhetoric of any leader, much less that who represents the highest office in our nation. And that type of politics has been incredibly divisive, hateful, racist, and it certainly doesn't speak to the overall values of folks that consider themselves Reagan-era Republicans. And there is no irony lost on me that President Reagan was very much involved in American involvement in the war in El Salvador, and that he is a former governor of California, and that I am now on a trip to El Salvador with a governor from California trying to figure out how to undo all the wrongs that have been done because of American intervention in El Salvador.
Without the violence in El Salvador in the 80s, would your family have left?
If the Civil War had never happened in El Salvador, there's no reason why my family would have immigrated. We were middle class. My grandmother was a nurse. My mother has a bachelor's degree from the University of El Salvador. My father, you know, also a professional. There's no reason why we would have left. Circumstance. The circumstance of war was why we left and why we had to have a new start somewhere else.
You're listening to my conversation with California Assemblymember Wendy Carrillo. She is a Democrat representing District 51 in Southern California. There's been some discussion about the cost of the trip. The final breakdown and tally won't be released for a while, we understand. But do you have any issues with some of the expenses being paid for by the California State Protocol Foundation? I guess the involvement of nonprofits in some of the costs for this trip?
The state doesn't have any type of discretionary funds for this type of trip. So unless you're an incredibly wealthy person outside of the governor or anyone else, how are you supposed to take these trips? We don't want to use state or taxpayer dollars for it. That would be there would be more critique over that. So these are ways in which you can actually fund these trips and learn about things that impact the state without it having to be at the cost of the taxpayer. And I think that's a good thing.
With the experiences you've had, the life you've led, and the opportunity that you have in this place of power now, what to you is the true power of your story?
I think the power of my story is that it is the story of millions of people across America, and certainly within the state of California. And if people can see themselves in me, and people can see that they can achieve success, and they can be involved politically, and they can make a difference, that's wonderful. If the people of El Salvador can look to me and say, we can achieve that as well, or we have representation that knows our story and that knows our interests because she's lived them, that's powerful. It is also a lot of responsibility to bear. And so I take my job very seriously, and I take the opportunities that I have very seriously to be able to work with the governor, to work with my Assembly and Senate colleagues, to work with our nonprofit groups, to truly advocate for the best for people. Because regardless of what it is that we do in this capacity, when we think of policy, when we think of advocacy, when we think of any type of change that we can make, at the end of the day, we're talking about people's lives. And the everyday person isn't thinking about the political maneuvering of an elected official. They're thinking about, how am I going to pay my rent? How am I going to pay my mortgage? How am I going to put food on the table? How am I going to make sure that I have gas in the car to get to work? And it is our responsibility and duty as the elected officials to make sure that people live their best lives and that they are able to live it in dignity.
Is there anything then that I haven't talked to you about? I don't want to let this moment go without giving you the opportunity to express what you truly want to express.
I would say that there are two El Salvadors. There is the El Salvador that we often hear about in the news, one that is riddled with violence and poverty. And then there's the other El Salvador that has hope and is working incredibly hard for economic prosperity locally, to improve education, to improve healthcare, to improve on the issues of human rights. And that's the El Salvador of the future. That's why this foreign aid or really an investment the United States can do within the country of El Salvador is huge. Even if we were to look at it, something along the lines of the Department of Homeland Security investing in the country, the Department of Homeland Security, I should say, spends about $27,000 to detain and repatriate one person back to El Salvador. Those $27,000 can help 33 young people earn employment and get job skills within the NGOs that are currently already working in El Salvador. And so it's perspective. It's about, you know, this. If we want to curb irregular immigration to the United States, then the foreign aid that is currently being invested in El Salvador helps with that. So cutting those funds will be detrimental to the future of El Salvador, and it's not going to improve the people staying within the country versus immigrating to the United States. And so we have to look at what we're doing as an investment to a nation that needs help, that has huge connections not only to California but across the United States, and try to do the best we can so that there's economic stability and economic prosperity within the nation.
Assemblymember Carrillo, thank you so much for your time from El Salvador. I have appreciated talking with you. I'm glad you had so much time to spend with us.
You're welcome. Thank you so much.
And there is a longer version of this conversation at capradio.org/insight. That was California Assemblymember Wendy Carrillo talking with us from El Salvador. She's traveling with the governor, Gavin Newsom, and his wife, the first partner, Jennifer Siebel Newsom. Tomorrow on Insight, we'll continue the conversation about El Salvador with journalist Lauren Markham. She has written a best-selling book. It's titled The Faraway Brothers. It's the true story of the Flores twins who fled El Salvador a few years ago and have since started a new life in California. And then I'll be in conversation with Lauren Markham tomorrow night in Auburn, also for the One Book, One Community event, which you are